Welcome to the Spheres of Spirit with Natzy Myers, aka the Lady of the Light. Natzy will discuss the everyday magic and wisdom of spirit which surrounds each of us, waiting to be discovered. She will share some of her remarkable orb photos, proving that our angels, guides, loved ones in spirit, and even pets surround us and guide us in our physical world. During this episode, Natzy will discuss one of the many spheres or aspects of spirit available to us based on her orb photography. She will also share a special channeled message from her guide, Leonini, and do an oracle card reading to help guide you along your personal spiritual adventure. And now, here is your host, orb photographer, author, medium, and speaker, Natzy Myers.
Hi, I am Natzy Myers. Welcome. Thank you for sharing your time with me. You know, I do this podcast in hopes that it will somehow open your eyes to the magic and the wonders of spirit in the universe that surrounds us all, and more importantly, that's available to us all. And this magic is not limited to where you live, nor is it a new magic. I have traveled to many countries, visiting many ancient sites and temples, and I have experienced the spiritual and divine realms wherever I go. Today, I would like to share with you some of that magic I was shown on my recent trip to England last month, and I have pictures. Now, I want to apologize for those of you who are just listening to this podcast, but I want you to know that the pictures are available here on Om Times Radio, or you can go to my website, theorbconnection.com, see all the pictures up close and personal. In fact, if you've missed an episode, they're easily reachable on my website. So I have a lot to share with you. So let's get started. So I did spend 12 days in England and Wales trying to visit as much of the special places as possible, including stone circles, ancient wells, sacred forests, homes of myths and legends. And who better to show me all the magic that was there than a wizard? So my first stop was at one of England's oldest stone circles. They're called the Rollright Stone Circle. Some say they are over 5,000 years old. There's a myth that surrounds these stones, and it says that there was a king traveling through the land with his men, and he was going to conquer England. And he stopped, and he saw this witch. And the witch told him, if you go up to that hill and look over, and if you can see this Long Barrow site, I believe it was called, then I will make you king. So this king of England. So this king said, okay, I know exactly where that is. So he walked up to the site, started to look, and he was shocked that a mound came up in front of him and blocked his view. Well, since he couldn't see the view, the witch knew that he should not be king, and she made that mound rise, and then she turned him and his men to stone. That's the myth that surrounds those stone circles. So the stone circle is actually called the king's men, and then the king stands separately. So I was there, and I was walking the stones, and as I paused in front of one stone, if we can get that first slide up, Chris, there you see on the left, a robin landed on the stone right in front of me and sang and sat there and looked at me. And I thought, okay. So I took a picture of him. Now I take nothing for granted. I hope you all know that the universe and the spirit world sends us signs in so many ways, in so many forms. Now I don't go making it up or looking for the signs. They have to happen naturally, organically, like this bird that was landing on the stone. So I took a picture and I thought, well, I'm going to have to look up the meaning of the spirit animal, robin. And then as I walked up the hill where supposedly the king was standing when he was turned to stone, this is the King's Stone on the right. And from this angle, to me, it looks very much like a bird, perhaps the robin. So when I got home, I looked up the meaning of the robin. So there's several myths and legends that surround, or excuse me, there's several explanations of the spirit animal meaning robin. But basically, what they all do agree on is that its meaning is of hope, renewal, and rebirth. It can symbolize new beginnings, new projects, and a sign of good things to come. Now, this was the first thing that I had visited. And there's that robin with the promise of good things to come. I thought, okay, this is going to be a great trip. And it was. So I thanked Spirit and we headed on our way. And the next place that we were going to was one of the whole reasons that I went to England. We were going to go to Stonehenge. I've always felt a draw to go to Stonehenge. And I was able to obtain tickets to be inside the stones at sunset. It was a very small group. And I was so excited. One thing that I always worry about, especially this in September in England, is rain. And I thought, oh gosh, if it rains, I'm not going to be able to take pictures. I don't take pictures in rain because the orbs that appear really are water. They're not spirit orbs. But we got there and it was absolutely gorgeous. The sunset was going to be phenomenal. It was warm. We walked around. Even the guide who was with us said, I can't believe the night that you guys got. But that's kind of how my whole trip went. It was like guided and set up. And everywhere we went, we were either the timing was perfect or we were the only ones there or these amazing things happened, which I'll talk more about in a minute. But Stonehenge was no exception. So I wanted to tell you that Stonehenge itself obviously is surrounded by many myths. But one of those myths is that it was constructed by the wizard Merlin. Excuse me. You're going to hear me mention my wizard friend throughout this presentation. He was there with me. Merlin, or the power of the wizardry, is very prevalent in these sites. So Stonehenge, recently archaeologists have said, now, how did Merlin do it? Well, it was said that he took stones from Wales and floated them to their present location and reconstructed Stonehenge. He called the circle the Giant's Dance. And archaeologists now, they're inside Stonehenge, are these smaller stones, and they're called the blue stones. I'm not quite sure of the exact number, but they're much smaller. There might be 6 or 8 of them, kind of pillar-like, maybe 4 or 5 foot tall stones. And these are known that the only place that they can come from is a certain place in Wales. But what's interesting is the archaeologists just recently have matched up the stones with the stones in Wales. There was some kind of, I forgot how they did it, but anyway, they said that the striations or the markings or whatever on the stones in Stonehenge match this ancient site in Wales, and that has been dismantled. So does that mean the myth that Merlin constructed these stones has some grain of truth, perhaps? I believe all myths start with a grain of truth. But anyway, so I have to tell you, when I walked in to Stonehenge, you know, we take a bus and you get off the bus, and I walked in and I went inside and it felt sacred. I didn't talk. I just walked around. I was struck by the stunning construction and the size. You know, you see it on TV, but when you stand next to these stones that are 25, 30 feet tall, just the immenseness of it, it's just so amazing to be around. You know, one of my, I wanted to show you too. I have, of course, I buy gemstones wherever I go, but this is bluestone from Wales. And as you can see, it almost looks starry. So I had to have bluestone. So I did buy that. But the one of my reasons to go to these places is to say and to find out, is there still magic there? Is there still energy? Is there still a reason why we need to understand these sacred places? Why we still need to visit them and find out more about them? So as I was walking around Stonehenge quietly, I stood there and I felt the best way that I can describe it. There's a study out that says elephants communicate long, long distances. They make this very low hum. It's almost inaudible to our ears, but you can almost feel it if you're standing next to the elephants. That is the kind of hum that I felt as I was walking through and standing still. I'm not allowed to touch the rocks or the stones in Stonehenge, so I couldn't put my hands on them. But standing as close as I could to them, you could feel this. One of my friends who I went with actually laid down on the grass, and she said she could feel that vibration, that subtle vibration throughout her whole body. So is there magic still there? Well, let me show you the next picture, if we can bring up that next picture. So this is a picture of the Stonehenge, and I cut off the orb. The orb was at the bottom of that big block in the front, and I've zoomed in on the orb. Now, I zoomed in, as I've told you in the past, I can see faces, and sometimes people that I show the orb to can see faces, but this orb had a face, and in this orb, in the upper, it's the upper right-hand corner, I believe, no, left-hand corner, is a face with a man with a beard. If you find his two eyes and his nose, his beard will fall into place, and I put this picture above. And that is a sculpture that someone did of Merlin. I'm going to talk about that sculpture more in a little bit. But I can see Merlin in that orb. I think that's amazing. Number one, I did get orbs at Stonehenge, which I find incredible anyway. And number two, that it had a face and I could see a man with a beard. I'm going with Merlin. So that was incredible. So can we go to the next slide, Chris, too? So this is the second slide, and it was taken also at Stonehenge and right at sunset. Can we go to the second? There it is. And as you can see, there's a picture without me, and then I'm standing in the picture on the right between those two. And of course, the sun is setting and it is shining and there is lens flare. But when you look at it, it's like I'm almost disappearing. I'm almost disappearing into what? Another dimension, another portal, another time. You know, it was just so amazing to be standing there and to be experiencing that and to try to imagine what this looked like and what happened there when this was either first built or in all its glory. So that I can check that one off my bucket list. That was just an amazing experience. So if we can let that one go now. So after Stonehenge, we actually were staying in Avebury. Now, Avebury is this little village, and the little village is probably only made up of, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 buildings. And I think there's 2 or 3 places to stay. We were fortunate enough to be able to secure one of the bed and breakfast rooms, and we stayed literally in the village of Avebury. Avebury is known for its massive stone circles. So the Avebury has a huge stone circle. Again, they think this one was 4,000 to 5,000 years old. And it has survived centuries of weathering and erosion. A lot of the stones have disappeared over the years, as you can well imagine, but there has been some reconstruction. They found some stones, they've stood some stones back up. But originally, there were 100 stones in the outer circle. And then on the 2 inner circles, there was about 30 stones each. The outer most ring of Avebury stone circle has a diameter of over 1,000 feet. So it is Britain's largest stone circle. And the northern and southern rings that are found within that have diameters of about 350 feet. And we stayed in the middle between the north ring and the south ring. It was just incredible. Also, at the Avery Stone Circles, there's a what they call the avenue, processional avenue, Avenue of the Stones. And it's over 1 mile long. And all the way, maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 feet apart on both sides of you are standing stones for the entire mile long. So what would happen is people would come process through this avenue to the stones for the rituals, for the ceremonies, for the healing, whatever took place there. So it was really magical. I also love that at Avebury, you didn't need a ticket. You just go. You're free to walk around. In fact, we had a picnic by one of the huge stones, and you just feel the magic. And plus, we stayed there. I couldn't sleep. The energy was off the chart. So I wanted to explain to you, what is a henge? A lot of people hear that word and they think henge is actually the stone circle. No, a henge is a mound, like a berm, and then on the side of it, all the way around circular, is a ditch. So the, let me find my thing here. So unlike Stonehenge, bear with me 1 second. I'm trying to find my definition of a henge so I get this straight. Okay. So the henge and the ditch around it, always in a circle, always encompass the stones. Usually the mound is on the outside, the ditch is on the inside, closest to the stones. But Stonehenge, it is unusual because that's reversed. The ditch is on the outside, the circular mound is on the inside. Now these are huge, you know, they go around the entire thing. Now why do they have ditches and mounds? I don't know. Here's my take on it. You know, water is an unbelievable conductor of energy. And in fact, most pyramids that they have discovered, if not all, were either built over an underground river, an aquifer, or some kind of water storage area, because it amplified the energy. So were these at one time filled with water to amplify the energy of the stones? Perhaps. You know, these stone circles and sacred sites, they're always found on what they call the ley lines of the earth. And I've talked about that again in my book, Encircled by the Light, Fantastic. And what we followed when I was in England was the St. Michael's ley line. And all these sites, the Stonehenge, the Avebury, and the others that I'm going to talk about, all land right on that ley line. So what I've talked about too is when they put the standing stones and they erect them and stand them up, could that be like acupuncture needles? Could that be tapping into the energy of those ley lines and then amplifying that energy with the water? To what end? To reach beyond, perhaps. Perhaps for healing. Perhaps for messages. Who knows? But it's done with intent, and it's no coincidence where these are located. So while I was at Avebury, I woke up one morning, like I just said, I couldn't sleep. And it was before dawn. And I thought, well, I can't go back to sleep. So I thought, well, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go out to the stones. I was literally 20 feet from entering the stone circles. So I got up, camera in hand, and I walked into the stone circle. And it was a most amazing moment. There was mist. You could see it moving along the ground. The sky was just beginning to turn pink. I was out there totally alone, just me, in the middle of this beautiful stone circle. And so, of course, I took a picture. So if we could bring up the next slide, Chris. And here's the picture. I hope you can see the mist. And that orb, the biggest one in the picture there, is against one of the bigger stones in the circle. And now I got a couple other, but this one amazed me because in the corner down here of the picture, you'll be able to see that I zoomed in and there's a face. And this face is quite amazing. I feel like it's a male energy face. It's very round. But where like a mustache should be, he's got almost like white whiskers. And his eyes are just piercing, especially his left eye. You can see his left eye just so clearly defined. So was this a being, an interdimensional being that maybe was responsible for the original construction of this amazing monolithic site? Maybe. You know, nothing happens willy-nilly in the spirit world. There's always a reason why these things happen, why it shows me these things. So I do not rule out that this is not somebody who was either involved or is still around, letting us know that the knowledge and the wisdom and the information is still there. They're waiting for us to rediscover it. So I just stood out there and I watched the sun come up, and it was just an amazing, remarkable time. So thank you, Chris. So the next thing that we did is we went on to what's called Tintagel, and that is in Cornwall, on the coast. Now, Tintagel is known for its castle ruins that they believe was King Arthur's castle. King Arthur's myth and legend is woven throughout all the areas that I went to. And we stayed at this little bed and breakfast right on the coast, within walking distance to the castle. The castle, we had to walk up a pretty steep cliff. I think I walked like 35 miles on this trip, but we walked up this steep cliff and went through the ruins and the views and the cliffs. And you can see why someone would have decided to build a castle here, because the one side was totally protected. It was far above the sea floor or the beach. And the view you could see everywhere. A sculptor recently has placed a statue. It's amazing. I encourage you to look it up. If you go to the Tintagel and Google King Arthur statue. You'll see it. It's one of my favorites that I've ever seen. So anyway, we explored all that. Well, there's a place underneath all that that you then walk down to. So we went all the way back down the stairs to the beach level, and there's what's called Merlin's Cave. Now, it's really, and it's only accessible at low tide. And as luck would have it, we were there at low tide. So we got to go into this cave. Now, I call it a cave, but what it is, it's really like a hole that's been punched through maybe, I'm so bad at measuring, 60, 70 feet of the cliff. So you can walk in, it has a huge opening, and walk all the way through to the other end and exit out at another part of the beach. But we walked in there and we sat down and we started our meditation and we started to tone. Now, when we come back, I'm going to tell you what happened in there and I'm going to show you. So we'll break right now, but I'll be right back to finish that story.
Om Times TV. Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities. The story told in Entering the Light Fantastic, Discovering Life After Life Through Orbs, is about Nancy Meyer's spiritual and emotional rising from the devastating ashes of loss caused by the sudden and unexpected passing of her son, Robbie. Just like the legend of the reborn phoenix, Nancy's life purpose and focus was transformed. With the help from her son in spirit, Nancy found herself providing proof through orbs that our souls do not die with our bodies. In her second book, Encircled by the Light Fantastic, A Deeper Journey into the Light with Orbs, Nancy continues chronicling her path of gaining spiritual knowledge and expanding acceptance of what is possible while traveling to many sacred and ancient sites around the world. She shares these experiences with you along with her photographs of remarkable spirit encounters.
When I first saw a turtle, my heart was full. Not anything but lonely.
We had this like deep connection, this heart connection.
He just wants to be close to you and part of your life.
Every day with turtle is a perfect day.
When I'm holding her, it makes me feel calmer.
I think everything he does shows how much he loves us.
When we adopt a shelter pet, we discover they're a little bit of a lot of things.
But they're all pure love.
Love.
And we're back. I have to tell you, I am sitting here with goosebumps. That's the first time that I've seen my commercial for my books, and I had totally forgotten about the phoenix. I'm going to tell you why in a little bit. Just amazing synchronicity here. So anyway, we're in the cave, Merlin's Cave, and we were toning and saying Om. And the myth is, or the legend is, if you do that and call in Merlin, he will show up as a blue light in your camera. So, can we bring up the next picture? So here I am standing in the cave, and you can see that that's the opening behind me, and the opening of the front is in front of me. Now, I zoomed in on this picture, because you see the blue light. And yes, when you take a picture into a source of light, it's going to have lens flare. And sometimes it produces what looks like orbs or whatever. But this is definitely a blue light, and it's pointing to that rock. So I zoomed in on that rock, and I about fell over. You can see that there is a face, again, with a man with a beard. And I have put that face that I used earlier in Stonehenge against this picture. That face, the rock sculpture, is actually around the corner from the cave. It was just done, I believe, in 2015. And the artist was named Peter Graham. And this was his vision of what Merlin looked like. I guess it was very controversial. A lot of people didn't like him doing this, but he was hired by the powers that be, and he sculpted this life-size image of Merlin around the corner from his cave. When I compared it to the image that appeared on the rock, because that image wasn't there, it was just a rock, and the blue light, which is the myth, if you call in Merlin, he will appear as a blue light. I have goosebumps telling this story. And he is so similar to this artist's vision and his creation of what Merlin looked like. If this isn't get your blood going, that, oh my gosh, the magic is there. The archetype of the wizard is still with us. The magic that awaits us is, maybe it's been sleeping, maybe it's been dormant, but it hasn't gone anywhere. We just need to know how to unlock it. So I just found this whole experience here in this cave was incredible. So thank you, Chris, for that. So then we went on to just up the road from that is what's called St. Nectan's Glen. And St. Nectan's Glen, is named after, obviously, a man named St. Nectan. Who is St. Nectan? N-E-C-T-A-N. St. Nectan, it is said, was the eldest son of a king, Brycean. And he was born in about 468 A.D. So we're talking early first century. And it was said that he was a holy man and a hermit, and this is where he lived, was in St. Nectan's Glen. And there's an amazing waterfall that I'm going to show you a picture of in a minute, and that is called St. Nectan's Keeve, K-I-E-V-E. I guess that's waterfall. And so they made him, and there's a church dedicated to him and everything. Now, I have to tell you this. This day that we were walking through this St. Nectan's Glen, and you literally walk through this unbelievable forest with streams and canopies of trees over you, and, you know, you just feel like something magical is there, you know, whether it's fairies or elves or gnomes or all of the above. But on this particular day, it was the autumnal equinox. I found out later that six planets were in retrograde, which included Mercury, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And I think a day or two before that, the sun shot out an M-class, which is a big solar flare, towards the Earth. Talk about a powerful mix of energies all at the same time. And this is when I'm walking through this glen and came upon this amazing waterfall. So if we can bring up that slide, Chris, please. So here's the waterfall. And what's amazing to me is if you look at the waterfall on the left, and it starts way, way up, and it comes through, and it looks like it comes underneath an elephant's trunk. An elephant as a power animal is just kind of a symbol of quiet power and wisdom. And now you can see the orbs on the left-hand side of that picture. And I zoomed in on one, and that's the picture on the right. Now, I put a stained glass of this man because he looks like the man in the orb. If you look at the man in the orb closely, and again, you know, you can zoom in and study this, you'll see what looks like the tip of a crown or a hat and his beard and his mustache. And so is that Saint Nectan? No one knows what he looked like. You know, it was, you know, first century AD, they didn't have cameras, but he's showing me as somebody royal, he was the son of a king. So is he still here? Is he still, he lived here and was, like I said, the holy man of this area, the protector. So is he still protecting this area? Is he still trying to let us know that there is still magic after all this time, after 1500, 2000 years, that magic is still there? Yeah. Yes. It was just an incredible place to be. I hope you can see his face. Thank you, Chris. So the next place that we went to, I'm going to talk a little fast because there's so much I want to get to. It was called Wistman Woods. Say that quick three times. Wistman Woods. And Wistman Woods is one of three small areas on the moors that are ancient forests. This area used to be covered with woods, but this is all that's left. And they believe that this woods, this part that we went to, is thousands of years old. Now, the trees that are there are stunted oak trees because the soil is so rocky, but they have dated some of these trees to be 400 and 500 years old. So it is a very old forest. And you talk about walking into a place where you think, you know, there's going to be a fairy, you know, peeking out behind the tree or the green moss. This is it. Again, when we were there, we were the only ones there. So we sat and we meditated. But anyway, for those of you that follow me, first of all, thank you. And my last podcast, I talked about the language of the universe, which was Om, and the sound. And I told you that when they use cymatics and play the sound of Om, it produces a pattern of concentric circles. So as I'm walking through this forest, I find this. And if you can bring up that picture, Chris. Here is a rock. This rock, boulder, I should say, is probably 6 feet across. And there's concentric circles. No one did this. This grows naturally. This forest is talking to the universe. It's showing the language of the universe. Now, I want to just tell you that it's a popular belief that this wood was a sacred place for druids to come and worship, and they worshiped around the many stones. I can imagine this had to be one of them. It's a wonderful place, and would this be a place where the druids and the wizards would come? Yeah. You know, there's myths and stories that fairies and wizards are great friends. And I talked a little bit about that in my second book. But anyway, so that was the magic of Wistman Woods. And then when we were leaving, there must have been a line of probably 30 people coming to visit the woods. But when we were there, again, we were the only ones. It's as if we were being guided so that we could discover all this on our own. Now, this last place that we visited, this is why I have goosebumps when I just saw my commercial for the very first time about my books. We went to Glastonbury, and Glastonbury is known for the tour. The Glastonbury Tor, which is a very high hill. And on top of the Tor is a tower. And it was constructed by the church, I don't know, early, early first millennia. And they call it St. Michael's Tower. And again, the ley line, St. Michael's ley line, is said to go right through this. So what is a tor? A tor, is the definition, is a high hill or high rocky place. And this town of Glastonbury is a little quirky. I'm an old hippie, so it walking through the town and seeing the people, I felt like a little bit like it was had flavors of the Haight-Ashbury, you know, just really unusual, quirky people. I just loved it, you know, very, very creative, artsy, musical. And but some say that Glastonbury was Avalon. Now, Avalon was a place with King Arthur. In fact, I'm going to tell you, there's a wonderful book that I just love. It's called The Myths of Avalon. It's a novel. And it ties in all these myths to a wonderful story. But when you stand on the tour and look around, at one point, and they've proved this scientifically, this used to be a marsh. A lot of this was underwater, and which plays right into the story of Avalon, how they would sail their boats, the mist would open up, and they'd disappear into the mist. But anyway, the myths associated with the Glastonbury Tor, which again is where that high tower is, are extraordinary. It's been called a magic mountain. It's been called a fairy's glass hill, a spiral castle, a grail castle, the land of the dead, a druid initiation center. There's those druids again. An Arthurian hill fort, King Arthur fort, a magnetic power point, a crossroads of lays, a center for the goddess fertility rituals and celebrations, and even a converging point for UFOs. But I believe that even something that predates all these ancient legends is what it really is. So I'm going to share with you what I've discovered and what I've come to believe. There is a thing that has just been discovered in the natural landscape that is called the Glastonbury Zodiac. There was a woman in 1927 that was hired to do an aerial map of the story of King Arthur's Grail quest and to map it out. So back in 1927, she had at her disposal for the first time airplanes. So she hired an airplane and went up in the airplane and looked at the landscape. And as she was up there, she looked down and she could see, it jumped out at her, because I think she was meant to discover it, Leo the Lion constellation. Leo the Lion constellation in all the natural contours, rivers, glens, in the land, it formed Leo the Lion. It wasn't made by man's hands. It was made by the Creator's hands, if you will. She found this fascinating and went up several more times. She ended up discovering 13 constellations in order, in a wheel that spanned 10 miles in diameter. You cannot see this from the ground. You have to be up. Who would do this? Why would they do this? The 13th one was called the Great Dog of Langport constellation, and he's the guardian of this great temple. Now, the zodiac wheel is considered to be the earthly counterpart of the star temple that mirrors the heavenly pattern. These are called this zodiac wheel, which goes back and predates even all these myths that I cited earlier, is called the 13 treasures of Britain. But Merlin, here's Merlin again, hid them from our view. He hid them from our view because he knew we were not ready to know the knowledge and to handle the wisdom that this wheel was teaching us. The Druids knew it. Merlin knew it. But remember, the Druids never wrote down their ancient teachings. They were forbidden, in fact, to write down any of their wisdom. But this zodiac wheel, the secret, and zodiac wheels go back. You can find them every culture as far back as you can go, that cultures knew the importance of the zodiac wheel, and in the same order. The only difference were two characters, and I'll get to that in a minute. So the zodiac's secret was the teaching of ancient mysteries, a huge array of knowledge in science, math, astronomy, agriculture, medicine, history, mysticism, among others. The zodiac can hold the key to unlock the doors that separate the religions of the world. How? Because it provides a basis for them all. This was powerful knowledge. And so the two that are different are the sign of Cancer, which in ancient times they say was a boat, and the sign of Aquarius. The sign of Aquarius is where the Tor is located. The highest point at the Glastonbury Zodiac Circle. In fact, I'm reading this book, and it's called The Glastonbury Zodiac. It's out of print now, but it's fascinating. And this was written by Mary Claire, but it talks about Catherine's discovery of the Zodiac Circle. But the Tor and the highest point and the most celebrated point of the Zodiac is the Tor in the sign of Aquarius. Now, in the Zodiac Wheel of Glastonbury, the sign of Aquarius is the phoenix. Mm-hmm. I had totally forgotten that in my commercial, I talked about how I had to rise up from the ashes like the phoenix. And that's what this is saying. The sign of Aquarius is about rebirth, rejuvenation, and rising up from the ashes. It is a time which we are entering now, which is called the Age of Aquarius, right? We are in the sign of Aquarius. After 24,000 years, we're finally back to the Age of Aquarius. And again, I talk about this more in my book. But the Age of Aquarius symbolizes hope, guidance, rebirth, and a new beginning. That's why it's the phoenix. And the Tor is the eye. I have goosebumps. I just have goosebumps because now I'm going to show you this picture. So whenever I travel, I always take a little bit of Robbie's ashes with me, and I'll find just the right spot and I sprinkle him. So he's all over the world. So I decided I was going to take it to the Tor. So if we can get that next picture up, Chris. So here's a picture of the Tor that's on the very top of the hill. And I sprinkled his ashes, and that picture of the tower is exactly the view. I was in front of that, and that's where I sprinkled some of Robbie's ashes. And then I walked up, and I stood in the doorway, and I asked my friend, could you please take a picture of me? And now she's not an orb photographer, but look what she got. She got an orb. Now, is that Robbie? I think so. And he's telling me, Mom, people are finally starting to understand the hidden wisdom, the hidden meanings, the power of these ancient sites. And on top of that, Robbie was born under the sign of Aquarius. So to me, it was just a crazy, magical day, and finding all of that out, and to confirm that, you know what, perhaps we are on the cusp of new beginnings, a new shift, new hope, new love. So I want to tell you two stories, because when we travel, I say, you know what, the magic is not limited to our backyards or our guides, or they follow us. So I have a guide, and her name is Belle, and she's an owl. And she goes with me on my trips. I've talked about this too in my books. And so as I was walking through St. Nectan's Glen, I asked Belle, I said, Belle, could you somehow give me an owl feather? Because she always lets me know that she's with me. And so I'm walking, and I look down and I see a feather. And I'm going to show you. It's an owl feather. But that's not all. As I was walking through the little town of Glastonbury, I see this antique store. And I walk into the antique store and I go, what am I doing here? I don't normally go into antique stores. And I turn to go back out. And to my right, I look down and there's this little wooden box. And if we could bring up the next slide, Chris. And there, I told you my sign, my guide is an owl and she's blue. And there's a blue owl. She's done this to me before. And I talk about another story in my book. But she said, life is not measured by the breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away. You know, it's like I tell my friend, you can't make this up, right? It's just to let you know that our loved ones, our guides, our angels, they truly hear us. They follow us. Also, some of you might know that my song, especially from Robbie, is Into the Mystic by Van Morrison. And I go into great detail again in my book about that and the magic moments with that song. But I'm walking through Glastonbury and I look up and there's this little shop and it's called Into the Mystic. And I stopped and I smiled and I said to my son in my head, oh, Robbie, I really am going into the mystic here. This is amazing. That night, a couple hours later, I'm checking my messages and my friend Marty McCray, who was a guest on my show, and you know that she has a very good relationship with my son in spirit. And she said, Nancy, Robbie came to me and he was insistent that I post this song for you, Into the Mystic, on your Facebook page. She didn't know that I had just said that to him. She didn't know that I was standing in front of a store that, you know, said Into the Mystic. So, which is kind of an interesting story, because not only was he right there with me in Glastonbury, then he just jumped and went, you know, right to my friend Marty and told her to post that song. So, okay, so I have a few minutes left. So I do have a message from Leonini that I want to read. So I'll just get right to it. It says, and I just channeled this yesterday. She said, she showed me a mason jar. And here's how the message started. Preserve. When you want to save the best of your harvest after it has been picked at just the right moment, you preserve it. This way it can be enjoyed by you and others long after that moment by simply unscrewing the lid and pouring out the goodness. People believe us. Oh, please believe us that when we tell you that inside your jar, your body, lies a bounty of the crop of love. This bounty never expires, nor can it ever be depleted. It has been preserved carefully within you, waiting to be opened and shared. Love is a theme that we have spoken to many times. It is simple, but oh so important. Your soul contains within it the bounty of all goodness. Open that lid, your heart, to compassion, to love, to sharing. We receive many prayers asking, how can this world be changed? It is through the love that has been preserved within you, waiting to be poured forth, that will feed and grow this desire. I thought that was a pretty profound message. And as she says, simple. She's talked about love many times. But we have it in our heart, preserved there, waiting to be opened. So I just wanted to also tell you, next time on the podcast, I will have a guest, Ani Williams. Ani Williams is an internationally recognized musician, harpist, and she is has 24 albums and vocal composition, and her music focuses on ancient feminine sacred traditions and the goddess that dwells within us. She also is a sound alchemist. She understands the power of sound. And since I just had that podcast where I talked about the language of the universe, the frequency, the sound, she's going to talk about how sound can heal and open portals and do all kinds of things, again, that we have lost the knowledge of. So I hope you tune in And we'll listen to that podcast. I think it will be very enlightening for you. And you will just love Ani. She's one of my dear friends now. So I want to thank you. I talked really fast. I had so much to share with you, but I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for tuning in. Remember, we are not alone. The magic is around us all. So you have a wonderful day. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.